Welcome to the Student Press Law Center podcast for January 2011, a monthly rundown of news about legal developments affecting the student media. The Student Press Law Center is a nonprofit source of information and advocacy for the student media, and we work to break down the barriers that prevent college and high school journalists from doing their best work. For more information about the center, go to www.splc.org. I'm Frank Lamonti, Executive Director of the Student Press Law Center. Thanks for joining us. Well, the problem of unaccredited online educational institutions cranking out graduates with useless degrees has been pretty well publicized at the college level, but it turns out that the diploma mill phenomenon is not limited to colleges at all. Investigative reporter McNally Torres and her team at the Florida Center for Investigative Reporting published an extensive story in December detailing how students across the country alleged they were misled into enrolling in for-profit online high schools. Hundreds of dollars later, these high school students say they were left with diplomas that accredited colleges will not accept. Diplomas that, in the words of McNally Torres's story, are virtually worthless. The story resulting from the center's investigation, titled Virtually Worthless, is bringing national attention to the lack of federal or state regulation of online high schools, and it is also bringing recognition to the work of the Florida Center for Investigative Reporting, which is a recent startup venture, a nonprofit news organization located at the International Media Center of Florida International University in Miami. McNally Torres is an experienced journalist who has covered business, consumer, and education news for publications including the South Florida Sun Sentinel and the San Antonio Express News. She is the associate director of the center, and she is with us today on the SPLC podcast to talk about her work and about the center's investigation shedding light on the dark side of online education. Well, thank you for being with us, McNally Torres, and let's start by talking a little bit about what the Florida Center for Investigative Reporting is exactly. How did this organization come into being, and what is its purpose and its mission?
Well, thank you so much for having me. I'm really delighted and humble that you invited me to be on your show. As you know, the investigative journalism has declined in the past 10 years around the country, and thousands of journalists, as a result of the current financial troubles in the newspaper industry. Thousands of reporters have lost their jobs. And we here in Florida is not different from the rest of the country. Obviously, we had also thousands of reporters losing their jobs in the past 2 years. And it's just been sort of devastated here in Florida. And there has been a huge decline in investigative journalism. So we recognize that there's a need. There's a need for watchdog reporting and in-depth storytelling that has sort of kind of disappeared or has been reduced in newsrooms across the state. So we started crafting and structuring this startup. It took us about 18 months before we got some seed funding from the Ethics and Excellence in Journalism Foundation, which is based in Oklahoma. And thanks to them, we were able to launch in September. We are the first bilingual investigative nonprofit in the state, and we are a content provider, and we are building partnerships. We already have a lot of partners in the state, including NPR stations in Florida. And, our goal is to not only provide content for the mainstream media and the ethnic media in the state, but also to collaborate in important stories.
That's great. And so you are housed with Florida International University, but talk a little bit about, this is a state agency, FIU, so how are you able to maintain your editorial integrity and your independence while being in partnership with a government agency like that?
Yeah, this is very interesting because, our mission is to investigate the state government, particularly, waste, corruption, and miscarriage of justice. The International Media Center is sort of an independent nonprofit that sits at Florida International University. And because of that, and they have over 20 years of experience training journalists in Latin America and Cuba. And so we recognize that because they're sort of independent and they're a nonprofit, we are a nonprofit too, and we are independent, that we could, you know, that having that partnership did not seem to be any conflict of interest whatsoever. And what we when we were looking at structuring, you know, our organization, one of the things that is very important for us is to be sitting at a university where there's a journalism school, so we can have access to students and we can train them. And I'm very passionate about this. I'm also a board member for the Investigative Reporters and Editors, so I train journalists too around the country, and I really, you know, understand that now a lot of young journalists are going into newsrooms, and it's not like when I was a young journalist, not that I'm any old, 15 years ago, you know, you will go to newsrooms and you will have these mentors and all these well-seasoned, experienced journalists that you could learn from. And now, but that has changed. The newsrooms are constantly changing. Those people are no longer there in a lot of newsrooms. So we're very excited about this part of our mission where we are going to be helping train, and not only train, but also, you know, exposing students, young journalist students, to produce investigative journalism, because they are the future. And, you know, we are very concerned about that, as many journalists around the country are.
Well, let's turn to talking about the virtually worthless story. Real quickly, start by giving people who are listening the bottom line of what your investigation concluded as to the state of the online for-profit high school industry.
Well, basically, you know, as you noted, there's virtually no regulation around the nation at the state level and also at the federal level. And in Florida, for instance, they do not regulate whatsoever private schools, and they're very upfront about it. You know, and so I had to, you know, look at the statute and study, you know, what's required. Well, the only requirement is to register with the state, you know, fingerprint the owner, you know, and send those fingerprints, you know, for criminal background with the law enforcement agency, but also submit an annual survey. State educators do not look at the survey for accuracy. So basically they take the survey and they just shelve it. And you know, this is opening the floodgates for a lot of these businesses not only to flourish, because the internet is obviously a vehicle for them to flourish, but also to take advantage of a suspected consumers, you know?
Right. Well, how did you become interested in this phenomenon? How did you decide to focus on that industry as a problem area? And what were the information sources that you used to get started?
You know, usually what happens is two things. You know, when you're looking at a story, sometimes it's a topic you're interested in, you know, start, you know, asking questions and delving in somehow. And the second, somebody tipped you off. And that's what happened to me this time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, somebody with knowledge about the school, somebody have already looked at it, sort of tipped me off on this. So that's what it got me started in the story. And you know, it took me a while to get acquainted and, you know, and learn about the industry and the regulation and talking to experts. A really good resource for me, because I'm a member of different groups. I'm also a member of the Education Writers Association, having been a former education reporter when I was in San Antonio, working for the Express News. You know, I was able to ask my colleagues on the listserv, you know, do you know any experts on, you know, on this topic? And that was very helpful.
That's a great resource. Well, you mentioned one particular school, and in fact, the story does grow out of and focus on a particular South Florida-based company called Continental Academy. And maybe describe a little bit. The entire story can be read, by the way, on the center's website, which is fcir.org, fcir.org. But maybe describe a little bit about what you found out about the operations of Continental, and in describing that, what were the sources of information, lawsuits, consumer complaints, things like that, that you were able to rely on?
You know, the story was not your Florida typical story where the owners of a particular, you know, a business might have a criminal background, or, you know, they have a zillion of lawsuits. I have come across with that many times here in Florida. I don't know. I think Florida is one of those places where, you know, anybody can open a business, and that's why I love working here. But
right.
This was not your typical story. There was no known lawsuits against this company. Yes, there are a lot of complaints, and this was one of those stories that it was a lot. It was record, meaning, you know, getting the records from different places. It was not a story like I've done in the past, which would be like a data analysis, and you analyze, you know, the data, like whether it's inspection data or what you have it. Here I have to go to multiple places. It took me a long time. Just researching the topic by itself, it got very overwhelming. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, you have to be very disciplined to sort of kind of keep going on a story like this, because you can very, very easily, you know, without even realizing, veer from, you know, and not having a focus. And that's why I decided to focus only on this type of school, because what I discovered is that there are many others. And it
yeah.
would have taken me a long, long time. It could spend easily a year looking at all the schools here in Florida, especially in South Florida. And, you know, I wear a lot of hats at the Florida Center for Investigative Reporting. So I knew I had a really good story with what I had, and I decided just to go ahead and do that. I got complaints for the Attorney General's office,
mm-hmm.
which they, you know, is public, and that's another beautiful thing about Florida. We have among the best open records laws in the country.
Right.
And I sure do take advantage of that all the time.
right.
Better Business Bureau had complaints too, and they were able to, you know, connect me to some consumers, former students. I also, you know, did searches on the internet. I spent a long time on the internet, not only researching a topic. I also like to see what has been written.
Right.
Sometimes you can learn a lot about that. I discovered this letter from the Commission on International and Transregional Accreditation, which is now a defunct group, and they have issued this letter, which is we posted on the story. You can go and read the letter. And the reason why they wrote that letter was because they were getting a lot of complaints from students after the school decided to withdraw their accreditation with the Southern Association of Colleges and Schools, which is a legitimate...
Right, and the SACX, SACS, that is a legitimate accrediting agency that,
yes.
in fact, is widely recognized by colleges around the country. So
exactly.
that would be a valuable accreditation to have.
Exactly, and I talked to them. I talked to the CEO. I had a conversation with him, you know, and, you know, the school didn't really want to meet the standards. And so they, you know, decided to withdraw, and this letter was issued, and, you know, I was just searching, doing searches on the internet, and I discovered the letter. So I went back to the Southern Association of Colleges and Schools, and I asked them, is this a real thing? Because that's
right.
another thing. Just because you find a document doesn't mean that it's a valid or legitimate document. You always need to verify it. A lot of this information.
Sure, sure. Or it could be a document that is meaningless without more context.
Exactly. So
right.
so I had to do that back and forward. And I also spent a long time, you know, one of my big questions were, who are the people who own this school? Who are the people behind this school? Are they really educators? You know, who are they? So,
right.
So I did that. I, you know, since it's a corporation and they have to, you know, register with the department for the Secretary of State. So I went to sansbiz.org, which is a great database by that agency, and I started looking at these individuals and the type of businesses that they have had. They have had some businesses that have not, that I didn't even mention, but they were all like education related. And then,
right.
You know, and then I checked the individual per se, you know, you check there if there's any criminal background, you check if there's any lawsuits filed against them, you check divorces, you check properties. I spent a long time checking all the properties that they had, the transfer of properties, and that's a very, very time-consuming task. You know, when I was at the Sun Sentinel, for example, you know, you have all these resources, and you have a researcher, and you tell her, you know, can you check me out these people? And they go and they check them out. And one of the things that I miss the most is on the LexisNexis has a product that is called Accurint, and
mm-hmm.
they usually, you know, you can get a dossier. And dossiers, sometimes some people, I mean, I had dossiers that from people that were like really, really bad actors, you know, with criminal backgrounds that will be like 30, 40 pages long. And
right.
a lot of information will come out there. Well, I don't have that luxury anymore. But it takes longer, but you can find the information. You just have to go to a lot of different places to find it.
Right. Well, and you mentioned, I want to highlight one, you mentioned the SunBiz website, which that happens to be what the Florida Corporate Records database
yes.
is called. But every state is going to have, and it's almost always under the Secretary of State for the particular state,
yes.
a corporate registry where one can look up, and it almost always is accessible to the public online, corporate registration, so that you can find out when did a corporation begin existing, has it been dissolved, who are the officers, who are the directors, who is the registered agent, and as you were able to show in your story, some of the people who were proprietors of these for-profit educational institutions had very, very extensive business holdings in other areas that had nothing to do with education.
Yes. And you know, I really love doing this. I mean, I guess that's what I do, To me, it's like a big puzzle that I just have to build, and you got all these, you know, you have to put all these pieces together, trying to make sense out of it. And, you know, I over the years, I have developed my own system, which, you know, I usually, you know, when I'm training journalists, you know, I tell them this is how I do things. You know, you can adopt. And some of these things I have adopted from other journalists. I have learned from them. Some of the things are things that I have, you know, after a while of doing it, you know, I've decided, oh, this works for me. So, but I think that being disciplined about it and organized are the most important things. You have to be disciplined. You have to be disciplined, spending the time of, you know, looking for the records, but not only looking and pulling the records, just looking at them and making sense out of the records, because there's always some lead on one piece of paper that might lead you to something else. And, you know, it's like, you know, you keep pulling, you know, you're peeling that onion, you know?
Right.
And you just keep, you know, one after the other. The other thing is fact-checking constantly. You know, one of the really interesting things that happened to me, like 2 days before the story was published, I was, you know, I'm very paranoid, so I constantly fact-check my stuff. And I was fact-checking the story last time, and I have already fact-checked the story like 5 times, I think. And I'm looking at the properties, and then I discover that one of the individuals, the one who spoke to me, I mean, they really didn't want to do a face-to-face interview, Mr. Lopez, like a day or two after I contact them, he transferred some properties, the ownership of some of his properties under the name of his mom, which I never really identified that in the story, but Nursey Lopez and Mr. Jeff Lopez seems to be mother-son relationship. So, and there was also another piece of property that I have noticed that it was purchased early in the year, but I wasn't sure that it was him. But when he transferred that property under his mom's name, then to me it was bingo. And, you know, I even used Google Earth to check on the property because it's an empty lot that he purchased.
To be able to
describe that in the story, you know, it was not a residence or any other type of property. It was just an empty lot that he purchased. I always find myself learning every time I finish one of these stories. There's always something that you learn, and to me that lesson was, you know, I'm always fact checking my stuff. Yeah, but sometimes, especially on property ownerships and things like that, you got to go back and check those transactions even after you have checked them, because you never know if there's anything new that has happened since the last time you check.
Right, yeah. And, of course, whenever you're writing about businesses and whenever a story is going to imply that there is anything shady or unethical about the practices of a business, any libel lawyer is going to tell you that is a magnet for libel suits if your facts are not correct. And so businesses who are accused of wrongdoing or of shady practices are exactly the types of people who are prone to bring libel suits. And so your facts have to be especially carefully checked in that situation.
Definitely. And, you know, and you have to save a lot of things, you know, and make sure that even things that you are not going to use, and, you know, nowadays there's so much you can do. I save a lot. I do a lot of screenshots. And that was a really nice conversation that we had with our attorneys when they were vetting my story. You know, and I'm a pack rat, you know, and now I have become like a virtual pack rat. I have so many files. I have this huge external hard drive where I save everything, you know, and I always produce a lot of paper. You know, a lot of these things, I print them and I put them in a binder and I organize things. Like right now, I'm working on another project and I'm a mess because I'm organizing everything. but I like that. I like putting things on a binder. I like having things safe on a computer. You know, it's just the discipline of being organized as you build, and you know, and it gets to a point that you become overwhelmed, and maybe that's when you really need to start writing, you know, little by little, and that's a system that I have developed over the years, and it really works for me,
right.
And you know, and it's amazing when I'm done with the story because it comes to a point when I'm pulling my hair, you know, and then I'm done with the story and I'm like, I can't believe I did that. Okay. Move on to the next one. So,
that is a great feeling. Well, just by way of wrap up in the couple of minutes we have left, if you're talking to a student journalist and the student journalist has a tip, let's say, that a particular school in their coverage area may be a diploma mill, maybe a school that is cranking out diplomas that are worthless and that are not going to be accepted by colleges, how would you go about verifying that tip? Where would you go to look?
You know, checking with the Attorney General's office to see if anybody else has filed complaints is a good way. Also checking with the Better Business Bureau. Yes, they're not a government agency per se, and they cannot, you know, do anything in terms of regulation, but they do have an extensive database, and they rate this business. They give them from all the way from an A to an F. So double checking that and seeing, you know, if they have a lot of complaints, you know, what are these complaints about? If you see that a company is getting a lot of complaints and they are not resolving those issues, that is a problem. Mm-hmm. That is a problem. They're not taking action. They're not trying to resolve. I mean, they're not doing anything. They're ignoring perhaps the Better Business Bureau when they're trying to contact them. Sometimes the Better Business Bureau try to be a mediator on these cases. And there are companies out there, I know here in Florida, I have written about a bunch, who completely ignore them. They don't, because they say, oh, the Better Business Bureau is not a government agency. Yes, it is true. It's not a government agency. But, you know, when you got your company's name on their website with an F, under it, I mean, that's not very good advertising for your business.
Sure, no question, yeah. Well, and it doesn't sound like this was necessarily helpful in your situation, but in many situations, too, reporters should be mindful that the courthouse is their friend. Get familiar with the civil division of the clerk's office in your state court in your community. Sometimes that's called the circuit court, sometimes it's called the state court, sometimes it's called the county court, might even be called the district court, but you want the state court. That's where a consumer fraud or a breach of contract type of an action would be filed, and you want to go to the clerk's office, run not only the name of the college, but also the names of the individual proprietors of the college, the president, the chairman of the board, any individuals prominently connected with the college who might be named as the parties in a fraud or a breach of contract lawsuit.
Definitely. I forgot to mention that. That's very important. You know, checking the civil lawsuits, it can tell you so much. You know, sometimes that's a huge footprint, you know, for your story, you know, just checking the lawsuits by itself.
Right.
I mean, I know I have companies in the past that I have investigated where they have zillions of lawsuits, and then you see a pattern, and sometimes that's what you see in a lot of this scrupulous operations is that they have a pattern of doing business, and you start drawing that pattern, and when you talk to the victims, they will tell you the same thing. And, you know, when you go back and you confront these individuals, this is a favorite line that I don't know how many times I have used this in my career when I am confronting them and trying to get, you know, answers. I tell them all the time, you know, I talked to X number of people. They all have told me that you did this to them. They don't know each other. They don't know, you know, they don't live even nearby. How can these people come up with the same accusation? You know,
right.
They're not getting together and conspire against you, as you know.
Right.
So that's a good way, is like looking for patterns, and you know, companies' actions. They leave a lot of trails. They leave a lot of records. They have to get licenses. They have to, you know, to do a lot of things in order to operate. And you know, those records are like a huge trail, and it's a huge puzzle that you just have to build.
Well, perfect. Well, that's the time that we have for today on the SPLC podcast, and I want to thank you, McNally Torres of the Florida Center for Investigative Reporting, for being with us and for sharing some really useful and timely investigative reporting tips. You can follow the work of the Florida Center for Investigative Reporting on their website, which is FCIR.org. And of course, we also hope that you will use and share the resources on our website, www.splc.org. Please subscribe to the RSS feed for the SPLC's news alerts. Become a fan of the SPLC on Facebook and follow SPLC_org on Twitter. And if you are a student journalist or a journalism educator with any question about your legal rights, call our hotline at 703-807-1904 or email us at splc@splc.org. Thanks for listening.